Hello, I'm Simon, and welcome to the Greater Manchester Hazard Centre podcast, providing workplace health and safety advice across the Northwest. Today, we're looking at mental health and young workers. This is a big, big issue in the UK today, with 77% of people experiencing a personal mental health issue before the age of 30. I'll be speaking to Janet Newsham of GM Hazard Centre, Catherine Mackridge of the TUC, and first of all, Kendall Bromley, Chair of Unison's Young Members Network.
In Unison particularly, we do an annual Young Members Weekend. Every year we discuss what are the main issues and topics that are focusing on young members. Every single year, mental health is in the top three. Mental health is one of those things that has always affected people. It's never not affected somebody. Your mental health is just a part of you. It comes alongside your physical health. But lots of people just forget it, or bravado, or egos, or because they need to pay the bills. They put aside their mental health and say, although I'm really stressed and although I'm not okay, you know, I'll put it aside and go to work anyway. But eventually, I think we're just starting to see a change in tides in mental health, and as a sign that actually mental health is really important, and just doing yoga and meditating for 5 minutes isn't going to cure it.
What's changed now, though, is that young activists are ready and able to speak out. Here's Kendall again.
We have a wonderful new generation of people coming through, and I think that they're a massive factor. And I think that this new generation of young people, not all young people, don't get me wrong, but lots of young people are way more open to actually just talking about their mental health, because they've seen what happens when mental health suffers, and they discuss it. And I think the online platform definitely has something to do with it, because people can be much more open and honest, and to whatever level of anonymity they would like. So if, you know, you want to talk about your mental health and say, I'm really suffering, but say that as, you know, without saying your name, then you can do. And mm-hmm. I think that's it's a place that has actually allowed, although there are definitely its negatives, the internet definitely negatives, there have been some really positive sides of it, that actually people have gone, oh, actually, I'm also suffering that. I also have, I'm also stressed. I'm also this, I'm also that. So I think it's really allowed a conversation to open up that's now coming off the internet and is allowing people to talk about. And actually, it's not just at home, it's in workplaces as well.
When Catherine and Janet and I sat down to look at this, we started off by examining some of the structural factors that combine to create, well, you can only call it a hostile environment when it comes to young workers' mental health. Catherine first.
There are a number of things about work and the workplace that can cause significant stress for young workers and can sometimes cause or at least contribute to poor mental health. So they broadly fall into three sort of structural issues. Firstly, the conditions of the labour market and how young workers are much more likely to experience insecurity, short-term contracts or zero-hour contracts, for example, shifts cancelled at last minute. Low pay, and particularly for those aged under 25 who aren't actually eligible for the real living wage. And there's few opportunities to progress through training in a lot of the jobs that young workers are represented in, to move into different work or to get higher pay. So this is a scenario that makes it incredibly difficult to plan your life. Not knowing your shifts far enough in advance makes managing childcare or a social life very hard, and not earning enough to pay rent or deal with an unexpected cost. And this is a stressful and anxiety-inducing situation for anyone. Secondly, workplaces themselves can contribute to immense stress and poor mental health. And by that, I mean working conditions, workplace culture, treatment by your employer. For example, no control over how your work is managed, unrealistic workloads, often driven by targets, the existence of bullying, discrimination and harassment. They are different things, but they are significant drivers of feelings of anxiety about work and of depression. Just one example, the TUC has found that 2/3 of women aged 18 to 24 had experienced sexual harassment at work. And that's not just from colleagues, but from members of the public as well. And there's quite poor or no management support around stress and mental health, particularly for young workers. A recent CIPD study found that 1/3 of managers are not confident in discussing mental health with staff. So line managers also, and supervisors, like, they need the time, training and resources to know how to properly support staff. And thirdly, we've seen immense cuts to public services, including to mental health services, which means fewer people, but particularly young people, aren't able to access the right support when they need it. We know one in six young people, that's age 16 to 24, has symptoms of a common mental health issue such as depression or anxiety disorder. But funding cuts have led to longer waiting times in mental health services, both for assessment and for treatment. And it's not just the NHS, the cuts to local authorities has meant the disappearance of youth services, squeezed schools funding means there's less pastoral support, and our benefit system punishes people for needing support. So unions must tackle all three of these drivers. And I mean, a fairer labour market, better workplaces and better services will benefit all workers, not just young people.
Janet, in terms of the research work that Hazards has done, presumably you've seen a lot of things that corroborate what Catherine's just been talking about the range and the complexity of the causes of mental ill health for young workers. And I imagine that there must be some quite distressing case studies that you've encountered as well. What sort of things in practice have been happening to young workers that you've encountered or found through your research?
Well, there's been a number of issues that were raised with us that caught our concern, that caused us to be concerned really about mental health and young workers. I mean, all the things that Catherine's talked about, absolutely relevant and proper that's happening. And an example last week that came to our attention was a young worker had been self-harming in the toilets at work. And when they came back into the office, the manager was really dismissive of it and said, "Oh, just get back to work." You know, and the safety rep was horrified that was the situation, that there wasn't a better understanding or a knowledge of what it was about, and that there wasn't any referral or support given by the management. And I think the things, you know, when Catherine says that management have not got the tools, haven't got the knowledge to deal with it, I think that's absolutely right. And they sort of look at it through a workplace stress point of view rather than actually there's some particular mental health issues that young people bring into the workplace. And the more that we have, you know, we're trying to attract cheaper workers into workplaces, and that becomes an added problem. There was a case where call centre workers became apparent that the employers are employing lots of young people on call centres in one of the utility companies, and they weren't able to deal with what they were facing because they all of a sudden they were being, you know, through the current times of austerity. So this is COVID situation, people were ringing up in desperation. So people ringing up and saying, "I'm going to kill myself." You know, and these young people had never dealt with that situation before and weren't aware that it was going to happen and didn't have the life skills or the skills to deal with it. And so put them in a really bad situation, you know, made the workplace more stressful as a result of that, made the work more stressful. But just weren't able to deal with it, you know, so you can imagine the impact that would have on their mental health as a result of that. So I think it's for all those, you know, for some of that anecdotal evidence that we had, but also, you know, the young people were telling us themselves, you know, that we're suffering from increased stress, increased mental health, and we think that's something that the employer should be dealing with and, you know, supporting us in.
As a result of the research you've done and the campaigning work that you've done, Janet, Is there a sort of suite of remedies or desired remedies that you think are available for employers to pick up if they can be persuaded to do so, or if they can be made aware that those things are available?
We sort of look at it in terms of three approaches. So that things that where trade unions can take direct action with the employers. So the first of all is a strategy for preventing work-related stress and mental ill health. So looking at what's going on in that workplace, there's the management stress standards that the HSC have. You know, looking at those and seeing how they can improve the situation, and that'll take training from management with management to actually look at how they can set up stress steering groups to look at gathering information, analysing the results. And then looking at how they challenge and they control those risks that they've identified. The second stage, second part of our strategy, we think, is about supporting individuals at work with mental ill health. There's an, you know, through the Equality Act, there's a legal responsibility for employers to support individuals with mental ill health. And that could be things like introducing a disability passport, so talking to individuals about what reasonable adjustments are needed and making sure that those are written down, and that then that goes with that individual. You know, it's reviewed periodically, it goes with that individual to ensure that reasonable adjustments aren't an issue in the future when if they change the manager or change where they're working. And, you know, looking at supporting them, attending mental health consultations, maybe introducing flexible working for those individuals. You know, if you've got anxiety, the thought of going into work can be an absolute nightmare, especially at the minute, like, you know. So there might just be some flexibility needed, you know, some support to put in place, and not, you know, and not any more pressure put on that individual. There's a case just, I think, in the papers this last week of an individual who died by suicide. And that was, you know, a result of mental ill health, but also the anxiety and the stress that had been laid on them in the workplace on top of that. And, you know, so we want to avoid all that. You know, it should be about taking away any stress, taking away any added pressures. And I think the final thing that we'd say is that there needs to be a positive mental health work environment. You know, so it's looking at how are we talking about mental ill health? How are we supporting people who've got anxiety, you know, anxieties in the workplace, making sure that everybody's trained in awareness and encouraging sort of open conversations around mental health awareness and not having any reprisals. So if somebody says that they've been off for, you know, with stress or something like that, then we don't expect the employer to then pick that up and say you can't go for another job because you've been off with stress. We expect that, you know, that's no reprisals, no consequences to that, that we've got a supportive environment, you know, whatever anybody's suffering. Mental health is another illness. It's, you know, it's mental health illness is just another illness like any other physical illness. So it should be treated in that way. People can recover from it, but they might need some reasonable adjustments to recover from it, or they might need reasonable adjustments to continue with it, but it doesn't need to affect the work that they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, what struck me about that overview that you gave, Janet, is that actually it comes down to fundamental, basic, long-established things that we do to ensure a healthy and safe and productive workplace. Risk assessments, for example, supporting individuals. The Equality Act, as you say, covers people who are in this position. And then risk management in terms of making sure that there's a positive mental health environment. Catherine, are there things, though, that through your work with the TC Young Workers Forum have come forward from young activists about what they themselves can do to try and mitigate these risks or ameliorate them? I'm thinking particularly of mental health support groups. I'm thinking of mental health reps that I know some unions and in some workplaces have come up. What are the sort of things that we ourselves can do because we can't afford to wait any longer for the employers or government to act?
Yeah, I mean, you're right in pointing out there's a few examples of, for example, the teachers, particularly at the moment, given the situation with coronavirus, and a lot of teachers feeling quite isolated and working from home. But, you know, their workloads are not kind of heading up as much as a lot of the press want to make out that they're kind of not doing anything. A lot of the young teachers have been kind of setting up peer-to-peer sort of support groups. So it's not something that would exclusively be sort of named as a mental health support group, but it's just ensuring that there is dialogue, that there's like connection between colleagues, particularly in the situation at the moment, which is quite isolating. There's also examples of where younger people, younger workers who are in non sort of unionized workplaces are starting to challenge this employer narrative around mental health and well-being as being a one-off kind of awareness day and an opportunity where you can take a meditation class or get free fruit or something for that one day, but in fact are being encouraged by employers to disclose the mental health conditions that potentially fall under the Equality Act. But the employer very hostile to that. So we've had examples from some of our young workers in organisations that do not have trade union recognition that are beginning to challenge this kind of employer narrative around being more aware about your mental health and saying that it's good to talk and to open up. Now, that's not inherently a bad thing, but as Janet pointed out previously, the kind of creating the positive mental health work environment kind of comes at the end of the list where you've got the robust policies, you've got the robust procedures in place that supports those who, you know, might need a more flexible way of working, or people who do fall under the Equality Act. So the idea that employers can kind of skip to the end and just say, well, as long as you're aware of your mental health, and we kind of we don't have to do anything about the workplace and some of the bad working practices that might be found, particularly, for example, in the call centres, Janet mentioned as well, that's come up with us. So it's really encouraging to see that, because I think young workers and young people are, you know, maybe more articulate, more, you know, aware essentially of their mental health, they're also finding more confidence in challenging some of this narrative, which essentially is the cheaper option for the employer, right? We talk about these needing to embed resilience in workers, which, as you said, it's not really anything new. It's stress management essentially, but it's a new name for it. And while, you know, resilience, it's a useful thing to have on a psychological level, it's not what employers should be doing. They shouldn't be trying to coach workers to be able to manage a risk better. They should be removing that risk in the first place.
Yeah, I absolutely. Prevention is better than cure. I mean, to use a hackneyed phrase. Janet, how do you see the campaign for more awareness about mental health issues and more care to be taken about mental health issues for young workers? How do you see that campaign progressing?
Well, we'd hope that, lots of trade unions are taking up the issue now in the workplaces, and certainly there's some good policies. I mean, our fear is that people go down the mental health first aid route without doing all the other things that need to be put in place. And mental health is first aid is just another way of dealing with people at, you know, who are traumatised in the workplace. But we want to prevent people getting traumatised. We want to prevent that trauma. We want to prevent people being made ill in the workplace, or made iller in the workplace. Certainly we want trade unions to take it up, but we need to go beyond trade unions, because quite rightly Catherine's identified that most young workers are not in trade union organised workplaces, and actually most workers are not in trade union organised workplaces now. So we have to get beyond that, and that's about going into other organisations probably to send our messages there, and also about talking to the HSC and other, you know, local authority enforcement bodies to how they are going to enforce it. Because just before the lockdown and COVID-19 hit us, then they were talking about prosecuting employers. And I think prosecution of employers who are disregarding the mental health of workers, so the stress that's being caused by employers, then that needs to be top of the agenda. Because when people are being, when the enforcement comes in, the people are being prosecuted, then employers will act. And that will be the people that haven't got trade unions, haven't got that protection, haven't got that added support in the workplace, will have to act. So I think that's the first stage, really.
Catherine, following on from what Janet's just said, obviously it's important to build the widest possible coalition to drive this agenda forward. Do you feel that there's more that TUC affiliates could do on this?
I think there's a lot that unions can do with other organisations around mental health. I mean, this is a huge agenda now more than ever in terms of what we're seeing during coronavirus and as we come out of coronavirus and into an economic downturn. And there's a lot of organisations, of course, that are supporting young people, trying to widen access to mental health services and doing a lot of work around prevention. So unions can be looking to build consensus with these groups around those aspects. But for trade unions, our expertise is the workplace. That's where we do our work. That's where we've seen our wins before. And so I guess our added value in these big campaigns around tackling the mental health crisis is making sure that mental health is considered a health and safety and workplace issue like any other risk. And of course, organising. You know, there's so many issues that we've already highlighted so far around the key drivers of stress in the workplace that can cause mental ill health. For young people, that's most likely to be low pay, insecure work, a lack of control over the direction of work, the amount of work, not being listened to by an employer. So it's making sure that we are pushing that sort of workplace focus in these wider campaigns, and making sure that we are organising in the workplace, particularly young workers who are disproportionately experiencing the kind of worst side of the labour market and the workplace at the moment.
Of course, we can't ignore, can we, that we're talking at a time where the COVID pandemic is unresolved. I suppose, given the societal issues, Catherine, that you've described, that's kind of like the icing on the cake, isn't it? As far as damage and potential damage to the mental health of young workers. Janet, what have you in the work that Hazard's been doing? How have you noticed the COVID impact expressing itself in this way?
I think there's a number of different issues, isn't it, with COVID-19 and how it's impacting on young workers. Lots of these young people will have experienced deaths of family members and deaths of friends as a result of COVID-19. And I think that's something that employers have really got to get to grips with, you know, how they are supporting people throughout this pandemic. You know, and home working is fine, you know, we were talking about home working, but they should have been supporting people at home as well. So on top of all the isolation of working at home and some of the unacceptable conditions that some of these young people are working in, if they are able to work from home, then they've had, you know, to deal with all these other issues as well. So it's not just home workers, but all workers and young workers that are going to be coming into the workplace with all the mental ill health that they had, with all the additional added stress that is now in the workplace, but they've gone through very traumatic experiences. And, you know, just as every other worker who's dealing with death in family members and friends. And I think that's something that we need to be aware of, employers need to be aware of and need to be dealing with. Lots of young workers have lost their jobs as a result of this. Lots of them in casual work and have been treated appallingly. And lots of them are at risk in the workplaces that they are working in. The hospitality, in fast foods, which are all going back, and not, you know, lots of them are not controlling those risks. And I think we'll have a massive impact on young people. I mean, having a massive impact on all sorts of different and workers in all different environments. But if they're going back and they think that they're not safe and going back, you know, we're getting phone calls from people that are saying, how do I stop, you know, how can I stop going back? Because I can't afford to be off work. I need to be at work. And yet I don't feel that I'm going to be safe at work. So we're trying to give them the knowledge, you know, the skills to actually question their employers in terms of risk assessments and what they're doing to put it safe. And we're trying to get them to refer to the HSE and other enforcement bodies to ensure that that what's being put in place in the workplaces are right. And if they're not right, you know, that there's somebody else that they can bring in. But that doesn't alleviate the anxiety and stress of the situation. And if you've got mental ill health, as I said before, then that's just going to add massive pressures on you. And so we can only reassure them, put them in the right direction, refer them, get them referred, go to the doctors, you know, that sort of thing, gets but, you know, all the stress of the system, the health system is in a real bad situation. And I think it's, you know, I think for young people now, you know, I think that's a really bad position to be in. I've got three boys who are looking for work. I've got a 19-year-old that's come out of college that's trying to start work. Another one who's been off work for 2 years and trying to get into work. And another one at university trying to balance this all. So I feel the anxieties that they're going through and know the issues that they're going through and how that's impacting on their health and definitely on their mental health.
And Catherine, presumably the Young Workers Forum reps themselves are in a similar position to Janet's sons, very much affected by COVID on top of an already difficult situation.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And in terms of the sort of immediate focus of the TUC in terms of young people and coronavirus is absolutely a focus on the recession that is coming, and the fact that those 25 and under are four times more likely to be in the two sort of highest at-risk sectors, which is arts, entertainment and leisure, and hospitality, as Janet said, which we already know are sort of blighted by insecurity and kind of having few opportunities to sort of to progress out from. So, you know, our big focus from us policy-wise is to have a sort of adequate and comprehensive job scheme for young people. So we're sort of tentatively very pleased that the government has said that they're going to be bringing in the Kickstart programme, but we absolutely think it can go a lot further and ensuring that it's paid at the real living wage and employers are topping up on those wages, making sure it meets local labour market demands and isn't something that's kind of just sort of centrally like thrown out like a lot of these government policies are, and ensuring that you know the jobs contribute to other incredibly important agendas, particularly around decarbonising the economy and the green agenda. I get the reason I bring that up is because there's a lot of doom and gloom, and for absolutely good reason. But for the trade union movement, it is to kind of join these dots together and think about what can we kind of prioritise and push, which will help a lot of workers across the economy, but particularly those sorts of schemes for young people, and to mitigate against the scars of sort of long-term youth unemployment. But in terms of how people are sort of dealing with the impact of coronavirus, I mean, yeah, like you say, it's not one size fits all. I mean, even myself, there's some days where I'm like, this is great working at home. And then other days, I just think I just want to see people. So, and that's from someone who, you know, has a sympathetic employer to what's going on and a kind of adequate, essentially, like working environment. But I just, I just said I wouldn't go down to doom and gloom, but the studies that are coming out, particularly children and adolescents, around the anxiety, not just from the stuff that we were kind of seeing before around a kind of poor labour market to be entering into and the stress of kind of exams and that education system, but now to kind of say, well, the plans that you had, they're not happening anymore and we can't tell you when they will start again. And that, I mean, everyone of all ages is experiencing that, but for people at the beginning of their, essentially like into the jobs market and seeing all this doom and gloom and reading about it and not, you know, being on their phones and just that's all they can read, you know, it's tricky for all of us, but let alone sort of those that are experiencing it. I guess sort of on a positive note coming from that, when you know, your previous sort of point around what are young people sort of doing to kind of tackle that, I'm really, really inspired by how many young people are involved in the Black Lives Matter movement, for example. And you can really see like just how kind of smart and articulate and like to the point that so many of these young people have about diagnosing what the issues are. And we're seeing that across the sort of broader labour movement and progressive movements, I think. And I think it's important, you know, employers often treat young people like they don't have a lot to offer, that they're kind of inexperienced, that they're maybe not so intelligent just because they're younger and don't have that experience. And that's absolutely not the case. And trade unions have to make sure they don't fall into that trap too.
But what is it that younger workers themselves want to see being done about all this? As well as playing a leading role in Unison's young members' work, Kendall is also the vice chair of the TUC Young Workers Forum, and she's in no doubt as to what would make the most difference.
So, although is obvious, many, many people forget that actually young people are still people, and we are looking for a lot of the same things as lots of other people are at work. So something really, really key that is vastly important for young workers and workers as a general is good terms and conditions and good workers' rights in the workplace. It's so undervalued, and actually just looking at your rights at work and saying, am I actually getting my proper rights at work, is massive. And if you're not getting your breaks is a massive one. If you're not getting your breaks, if you're not being paid properly, if you're being paid an ageist minimum wage on the banding scales, it's not illegal is beyond me. How? Because that is pure age discrimination, the minimum wage bandings. So, you know, you can be a young worker, as I was, as many people are at 16, working a job for, I mean, a very small amount of money, and your colleagues next to you is, you know, double that plus more. And often you tend to do a better job of it as well because you're young and you're trying to prove that actually you should have a seat at this table, and, you know, you put in a lot of effort and you put in a lot of work and you just don't get, you know, you just don't get the rewards out of it. And that is really stressful. really, really hard for young people. We have the exact same outgoings as every other person. You know, we might not necessarily have a family at 16, but lots of young people at 16 are having to live on their own. They're having to support other family members, carers. You know, there are so many situations. It's completely immoral to have these minimum wage bandings, in my opinion. So what I would like, and I'm sure what many, many other young workers would like, and what is regularly discussed, is just basic pay, just normal terms and conditions in the workplace, being able to take your breaks and not feeling bad about it. There's also a massive culture with 0 hours contracts that is just so tricky for young people. You know, we need jobs. I've often worked 2 or 3 jobs because I need to pay the bills. But by having 2 or 3 jobs, you then get, there's so many other things that come with that. And being on 0 hours contracts, when I was at college, I was working as a lifeguard and I would take shifts literally as they came. So if I got a text at like one in the afternoon, I'd be in the middle of a lecture and I would get a text that said, can you work tonight? If I said no, I would not get offered another shift. So I would always make sure I always took those shifts because I was so panicked and scared that I would no longer have an income, that I would often leave college early. Sometimes I wouldn't turn up because I needed to get those shifts in. And as soon as I stopped and I said, actually, I'm in my last year of college, I really need to focus, I just stopped getting offered shifts. So I went from working, you know, 5, 6, 7 shifts a week to maybe 1. And then it was the next person who would always be phoned. And if then he didn't come in, the same thing happened. It's just always that new person. And there's a massive culture shift in, I mean, pretty much probably every workplace in across the country that really needs to happen, that says actually young workers are not just young, they're also workers and they're really important.
Do you think it's conceivable that this issue will be mainstreamed onto the negotiating agenda to such an extent there may even be disputes, strikes, and more militant sort of action about it? Or are actually people too fragmented at the moment?
I think that's a really great question. I think there's definitely something to it, and mental health really is something that needs to be taken seriously by not just, you know, employers, but by unions and actually trade union reps in their workplaces. Even now, lots of trade union reps are still like, oh, blah, 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 mental health, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, so young people saying, I never suffered with this. I never had, this never happened in my day. It's a classic phrase that, this never happened in my day. It's something you hear all the time. And yes, it did happen in your day. You just never heard about it because people were so frightened that they never said that they were feeling under pressure. So I think it's one of those things that, although massive national action would be amazing, and I think if anybody, I don't know how anybody could work that out, but I think if, you know, the fragmentation is so deep currently between workplaces and between privatisation and all the different things, so I think it would be really great if we could just get basic rights. Start there.
You can find out more and get help and advice from gmhazards.org.uk and tuc.org.uk/young workers. We hope that you've enjoyed this podcast and we'd love to hear what you think on this key issue of mental health in young workers. Email us at mail@gmhazards.org.uk, tweet us at @centregreater, and please do share the podcast widely on Facebook, Twitter and other social media platforms that you may use. Health and safety is a right, not a privilege or a favour. That applies uniformly and universally. Thanks to Janet, Catherine and Kendall, but most of all to you for listening. And if you're not a member, join a union today. Stay safe and well. Until next time, goodbye.